The following is a recording for Suzanne Sonic with the American Hospital Association of Chicago on Friday, November 17th, 2017 at 12 p.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have all our speakers in conference. Participation is caused by express written invitation of the AHA only. Unauthorized participants or any part of the aides and abets such unauthorized participants may be subject to criminal and civil penalties under both state and federal law. Please disconnect if the AHA did not expressly invite your participation. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the call over to Ms. Shauna Brown. Ma'am, go ahead.
Thank you, Travis. Good afternoon, and thank you all for joining us today. The American Hospital Association Section for Long-Term Care and Rehabilitation is delighted to host today's members-only call with members of our policy team to highlight the key provisions of the Home Health Final Rule for the calendar year of 2018 and its implications for you as home health providers. Joining me on the call is Rochelle Archuleta, Director of Policy, Director of Post-Acute Care Policy, and Caitlin Galuli, the Associate Director for Policy at the American Hospital Association. They will review the provisions as well as CMS's proposed redesign of the home health PPS that would take effect on January 1st, 2019. Included with your confirmation for today's call was the slide deck for the presentation and the AHA regulatory advisory on the rule, which are also both on the AHA website. After their presentation, our speakers will respond to the questions and the comments that you'd like to share. And at this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Rochelle to kick us off.
Yes, great. Thank you, Shauna. And thanks to everyone who joined us on the call today. We're looking, of course, at the final rule for the home health PPS for calendar year 2018. We're going to divide our summary of that rule into two sections. I'm going to kick off with a discussion of the payment-related provisions, and then I'll turn things over to Caitlin to cover the quality-related provisions. So let's start by turning to slide two, which is a quick snapshot. This final rule relative to others in recent years was very short, very concentrated, and it's also notably shorter than the proposed rule that was issued for 2018. So it's pretty straightforward. We had some cuts in play that we knew about because they're related to action by Congress. The net fiscal impact of this rule is a decrease of $80 million in 2018. That's a 0.4% drop relative to 2017 payments. And that profile holds for both freestanding agencies and facility-based agencies. This net cut includes a 1% update that was mandated by Congress instead only for 2018 instead of what we typically see, which is a market basket increase, which is an inflationary increase that matches inflation in the field. The typical statutory or market basket increase was replaced with this 1% update as part of the physician fee payment cliff that was fixed under the MACRA legislation. We also see another case mix cut of negative 0.97%, more on that in a moment. What we don't see here that we've seen for the prior 4 years is no rebasing cut. As you'll recall, the Affordable Care Act authorized a very large rebasing cut out of the home health payment system, the largest post-acute care cut in the Affordable Care Act, a $40 billion cut that was phased in over 4 years, and 2017 is the final stage of that four-year cut, so we don't see that in the 2018 final rule. What we also don't see is a continuation of the rural payment add-on, the substantial 3% add-on that is scheduled to be phased out after December 31st. Of this year. What I wanted to flag for you is that a five-year restoration of this add-on is under discussion in the House tax bill that was voted on this week. So we'll see how this particular provision fares once we have language out of the Senate and both the versions of the tax bills are reconciled. The bottom of the slide includes just a few payment highlights, but there's a far more detailed summary of the payment provisions in the regulatory advisory that was shared with you when you received the meeting reminder yesterday. Looking at slide 3, just a little bit of additional detail on the case mix cut. When CMS looks at case mix increase, they divide it into two categories. One is real case mix increase, which they estimate is associated with an actual increase in acuity in the patient population that's treated in the setting. The second segment of overall case mix increase is nominal case mix, and CMS estimated that in calendar years 2012, 2013, and 2014, a portion of the case mix increase was only nominal case mix increase, meaning it wasn't correlated with an actual rise in patient acuity. To offset for that nominal case mix increase, we've seen a cut of negative 0.97 in 2016, 2017, and 2018. The 2018 installment of that three-year cut is scheduled to be the final installment, so we'll see what CMS does in this regard when we see next summer. We'll see the proposed rule for 2019. The next couple of slides are the final slides of the payment, and they address the true big news in this final rule. You'll recall, and let's just go ahead and look at slide 15. You'll recall that in the proposed rule, CMS put forward a completely new payment system for the home health PPS that they proposed to take effect in calendar year 2019. That model is called the Home Health Groupings Model, or HHGM. This is a very different approach to payment. Instead of relying on therapy, the HHGM relies on a comprehensive assessment of the patient's characteristics, including the metrics that you see here in the HHGM diagram. In general, we're supportive of the direction here, but we had raised a lot of concerns given that this is a completely different and far more complex system. We really considered the HHGM to be a transformational change for the home health field if it was finalized. CMS did not finalize this proposal, and that's one of the reasons that the final rule is so brief. In fact, they said very little about this. They just said they'll continue working on this and continue to be in collaboration with the field. We had a meeting with CMS earlier this week, and they flagged that for a typical home health proposed rule, they usually receive around 300 comment letters. For this particular proposed rule, they received 1,300 comment letters. In several occasions, when asked to describe where the agency is as they now contemplate next steps for HHGM, they said several times that they're working with leadership, that means the White House, to consider next steps. So great interest, of course, on knowing more about what those next steps are, and we'll certainly be on high alert for any news there. I'll just give you a quick rundown of some of our concerns, which collectively we thought were rather substantial, and substantial enough that in the end AHA called for CMS to pull back and complete the proposal before moving forward. So we were pleased that the proposal to implement the HHGM in 2019 was withdrawn. I'm going to quickly run through what our concerns were. One was that when we've seen this type of overhaul in the past, generally implemented in a budget-neutral manner, that wasn't the case here. That raised tremendous concerns in the field as to whether CMS had the authority to completely overhaul this payment system in a non-budget-neutral manner. What that means is they proposed two scenarios, and in one of those scenarios, in 2019, they would have taken almost $1 billion off the top of the payment system. So instead of just implementing a new structure, they were proposing to implement a structure plus a $1 billion cut. So, again, incredibly strong response by the field, including very strong indications that multiple parties within the field were prepared to sue CMS the minute the final rule came out. CMS pulled back, and so the ball is now certainly in CMS's court. Some of our other concerns pertain to the underlying data. We felt that the industry, that CMS was using data that are far too old, considering that this not only home health, but post-acute care as a whole is in transition due to alternative payment models that are being implemented in many markets, as well as all of the regulatory changes that have been very active in this field. We were also concerned about the tremendous and obvious absence in the proposal, which was that it failed to discuss how access to care would play out, especially for higher acuity patients, which we're especially concerned with as hospital-based agencies. We were very surprised and disappointed that the model lacked a lot of important detail. I'll share one example. In one of the important tables in the proposed rule, the model discussed behavioral response by the field and noted that the agency had made assumptions on how the field would respond under the new model and incorporated some of those assumptions into the model, yet they only referred to those assumptions once in a footnote. We felt that that was a tremendous and inappropriate oversight. Looking at some of the problems, we felt that the discussion on the proposal to transition from a 60-day episode to a 30-day episode was far too brief and lacked very important details on how this new episode would align with the 60-day plan of care, the 60-day physician certification process, and the OASIS assessment schedule, and just found that CMS was far too brief in laying out how that alignment would occur, which left us unable to really address and understand the type of burden and confusion that would be imposed on both patients and providers if all of these cycles did not align. And one final thing that I'll flag is CMS did spend about 3 years developing the HHGM, but they did so without stakeholder input during the development process itself. As a point of comparison, CMS recently spent 5 years developing a brand new SNF PPS model, and in doing so, they involved 3 extensive technical expert panels so that they were incorporating guidance and feedback from the field during the development process itself. CMS skipped that process here with HHGM, and we thought that was another very critical weakness in their process that needs to be corrected moving forward. So with that, I again want to emphasize that we're very pleased that CMS pulled back and has tabled until a time in the future further work on this model. And with that good news, I will turn the call over to Caitlin.
Thank you. So on this year's proposed rule regarding the quality reporting requirements, nearly everything was finalized, a few small tweaks, and if you listen to any of our calls on the rules in the other post-acute care settings, a lot of this is going to sound familiar, but this is all mostly good news on the home health front. So I just want to point to slide 7 with a reminder of the Impact Act, which is really what's driving a lot of the changes in the quality reporting programs for home health and the other post-acute settings. The past few years, this year, and probably into the foreseeable future. The biggest point that I want to remind you of in the Impact Act is that the Act requires the creation and implementation of standardized and interoperable quality measures across the 4 different post-acute settings and standardized patient assessment data. On slide 8, you can see a reminder of what has been previously finalized. So a few years ago, we saw a few new measures implemented in the Home Health Quality Reporting Program addressing skin integrity and functional status, as well as major falls. Major falls was mentioned this year in this final rule. And then last year, we saw several other Impact Act measures adopted in the final rule around medication reconciliation and resource use. Now, we do see a few changes around the measure regarding skin integrity and in major falls. So on slide 9, I'll address the changes around the skin integrity measure first. Now, CMS did finalize their proposal to add this new measure, which is really a replacement of an existing measure on pressure ulcers and injuries. So this final rule would remove the current pressure ulcer measure and replace it with a new Impact Act appropriate skin integrity and post-acute care pressure ulcer or injury. So these measures are fairly similar, a few important differences between them. The new measure would include unstageable pressure ulcers, including deep tissue injuries. It would also calculate these rates in a slightly different manner. Now, we commented that we had some concerns around the inclusion of deep tissue injuries when there has been some discrepancies across the field and how to define that type of injury or pressure ulcer. And in response, CMS said that they plan to use the National Pressure Ulcer Advisory Panel, or NPUAP, definitions of these injuries and update the guidance and the QRP manuals to provide examples of how to identify these types of injuries. This will involve adding a new data element into the quality reporting program. And again, in terms of how this is going to be coded, CMS does contend that they plan to offer additional training on how to code this, more member calls, special open door forums, et cetera, as they have done with some new measures in the past. Now on slide 10, you can see that CMS also added a new functional assessment measure. Now this is an application of a current measure in the LTAC setting, so that's why it's called application of percent of long-term hospital patients with an admission and discharge functional assessment and a care plan that addresses function. So as a reminder, what an application measure is they are just using the measure as it has been specified for the setting in which it was endorsed, NQF endorsed, and just kind of copying and pasting it into the new setting, into the home health setting in this case. So functional assessment is a domain that is required by the Impact Act. This measure is coded using a 6-level rating scale, so rating the patient from a scale of 1 to 6, 1 being the least independent, 6 being the most independent functional activities. So as I mentioned, this was originally developed and tested as part of the PAC Payment Reform Demonstration or Post-Acute Care PRD pilot. It is not NQF endorsed for the home health setting because it was specified and developed for the LTAC setting. We also contend that several of these items involved in performing this assessment are duplicative with items that are currently in the OASIS Section GG, but CMS contends that because this is an Impact Act measure, it really has to be something that's interoperable, that's standardized between all four measures, so it doesn't really matter what's already in the OASIS because there has to be something independently standardized across all the different sites. So we are going to continue to talk to CMS about any time they're adding these new standardized and interoperable measures, looking for other items that are very similar or identical that are already in the QRPs that are already being reported to try to remove if they're not adding any useful information. But that's something that we plan to have a conversation with the team there actually later this month. So that's another new measure. And then the final new measure that we saw added this year is on slide 11, which is falls with major injury. So again, an Impact Act appropriate measure that is really about the incidence of major falls. So the Impact Act requires a measure that really counts the number of falls. Now, the Home Health Quality Reporting Program already has a measure about falls, but it's a process measure about steps taken to prevent falls in the home. So although we contended that we think that that process measure is more appropriate for the home health setting, again, CMS answered that the point of these Impact Act measures is that they are standard across all the settings. And by standardized, they must mean exactly the same. So we still have some concerns about attributing falls to a single provider and even collecting data in a setting where a provider is not present with the patient at all times. And so there was some suggestion in the proposed rule of stratifying these rates by where the patient came from, so whether the patient was transferred to the home or started the home health episode after coming from, say, an IRF or an LTAC or just coming from the hospital from an acute inpatient hospitalization. But that was really not addressed in the final rule. In fact, CMS says that they believe that stratification or risk adjustment of this measure would be inappropriate because falls with major injury is a never event. So this measure would add 2 standardized items to OASIS for a collection at the end of care. So you'd be counting the number of falls that occurred during the episode when the episode has completed. Now on slide 12, we have some of the good news, which is the removal of several data elements from several OASIS items. So remember that OASIS items are collected at various points throughout the episode, so it could the same item could be collected at the start of care, resumption of care, partway through the care episode, at the end of the care episode, or discharge, or death at home, et cetera. And so CMS did a review of all the measures that are, or of all the items that are in OASIS and found, originally they found 247 data elements across 35 OASIS items that were not being used for anything. They're not being used in payment programs or in quality reporting programs or anything, so they were really unnecessary and not offering any useful information. So they proposed to remove 247 data elements. However, upon review, they found that three of these data elements actually do have to be included. Two of them are actually connected to payment programs, and so two items are going to be retained. One item is going to be retained but has some of the individual elements removed from it, which is why you're going to see two different numbers about the number of data elements removed in the proposed rule versus the final rule. But the high-level takeaway from this is that we're removing 235 data elements across several different OASIS items. Now, I do want to touch on the standardized patient assessment data, which starts on slide 13. So as a reminder, the Impact Act requires the collection of not just the standardized quality measures, but also standardized patient assessment data. And they require this in really the same way that they require the reporting of the quality measures, in that any failure to comply with the administrative requirements or failure to report this data would result in a payment reduction. So as you know, there are four different assessment instruments that are used in each of the individual post-acute care settings. And so in order to satisfy the statutory mandate of the Impact Act, at some point, CMS will have to collect standardized data elements that address the domains that you see on this slide, which include functional status, cognitive function, special services, medical conditions and comorbidities, and impairments. So in the proposed rule, CMS put forth a very, very long list of data elements that would satisfy all five of these domains. And several of these would be brand new to the home health setting, would be brand new to OASIS. Some of them are items that are either similar to OASIS, items, the same items that are already being used at OASIS, or some kind of different parts of the same items. But the proposed rule would have added about 25 new data elements with several sub-elements to them to OASIS. And on slide 14, you can see what the requirements around reporting those data elements would be. So the reporting for calendar year 2019 payments, which is based on a 2018 quality performance, to comply with that year's data, you just have to report the pressure ulcer measure, this newly finalized pressure ulcer measure, just for the first two quarters of calendar year 2018. Every other year will be based on the full year of data, but just for this coming year, compliance means reporting on the pressure ulcer measure for the first two quarters of the year. Following that year, CMS would have had all OASIS, all home health providers, as well as all of the other post-acute care providers, report on this very, very long list of new data elements starting on January 1st of 2019. And all of the administrative requirements would have been the same. Now, we and several other organizations objected to this, saying it's just far too much too fast. There seems to be a complete disconnect between CMS in the field in terms of how much work and burden is associated with updating the data assessment tools, the training involved that's necessary to make sure that all of these items are being collected uniformly, and just the general burden of making sure that all of this brand new data is submitted in a very short amount of time. So hearing our objections, as you can see as on slide 15, what was actually finalized, rather than requiring that very, very long list of data elements to address those five domains that I listed, CMS is only going to be requiring reporting for two of the five domains, those two domains being functional status and medical conditions and comorbidities. And to meet those domains, home health providers would only have to report on these data, on these patient assessment data elements that are already included in OASIS. So nothing new would be added for the calendar year 2020 payment year, which is based on 2019 data. So this is a very major win for us. We're very happy that CMS heard us about the burden. As I mentioned, we're going actually up to Baltimore later this month to talk to them about what they foresee the future of the rollout of the Impact Act requirements to be, because they are statutorily required to develop and implement these standardized and interoperable patient assessment elements. So that's really it for the Home Health Quality Reporting Program. Just a few notes on the Home Health Value-Based Purchasing, or VBP, program, which you can see an outline of on slide 16. This program is in a pilot stage in 9 states, which you can see listed on this slide. And so all home health providers in those 9 states are subject to payment adjustments of up to 8% as the program progresses. That's based on performance on 24 different measures. So for a detailed explanation of how this program works, I suggest you look at our 2016 Final Rule Regulatory Advisory, which gives some very detailed explanations on how the scores are put together. But as I mentioned, this is in a pilot phase, and it's just in those 9 states. So in slide 17, you can see a few changes that were finalized for the VBP program. The first change was that there was an increase in the minimum number of completed HCAHPS surveys needed to calculate a score. So previously, home health providers only needed to collect a minimum of 20 of these home health CAP surveys in order to have a measure calculated based on those survey outcomes. But CMS found that number of 20 gave a very small sample size, and it also didn't very well align with the other CAP survey programs, which all use a minimum of 40 surveys. So CMS finalized it. Now we have a new minimum of 40 surveys to meet. It's going to make those data more valid because it's based on the larger sample size. It's also going to be more in line with the other CAP survey programs. And CMS has reissued the interim performance reports to show the difference in the home health provider score when using 20 surveys for these measures versus 40 surveys. And there's very little change across the board, although individual states did see some larger changes. So Arizona, for example, did see some more major shifts in total performance scores. But across the board, it's really not more than about 3 to 5 points on a score. Most of the time, it's about a change of one plus or minus 1 point on a score when changing this minimum number of surveys. And then the other change that was finalized was the removal of one of the measures from the program. CMS finalized the removal of the drug education measure beginning in the third year of the program, which is calendar year 2018, or next year, as the program began in 2016. So this is good. This measure is not very informative, and CMS realized that it shouldn't be in the program, so they have removed it. So that's really all that I have for the Quality Reporting Program and the Home Health Value-Based Purchasing Program. And so with that, operator, I think we can open the line for questions.